Larry's with us now, too.
Awesome. Great. So, do we have Ryan?
Yes, you have Ryan, Barry, and Larry.
We're all here.
We'd like Christine to be in here, but the other CSA next tour is out of the office, and she's covering like 6 lines right now, so it's just not practical.
All right. Terrific. Well, congratulations, Ryan.
Thank you.
Are you getting any sleep?
I'm doing better than most, yes. My wife let me sleep from about 12 to 6, and then I'm getting up with our other daughter and getting her ready for school and doing all that jazz. So we're taking turns.
That's great. That's great. My wife was good that way, too, and I was able to perform at least in a reasonable way during the day.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually started reading the Powerful Engagement. So, like, it's really resonating, I'll tell you. It's really, really serious stuff.
No, it's really, you know, when you read it and you say, that's me, that's when it hits
you
and you go, you know, I gotta. And, you know, one of the things that we all have learned is that making resolutions in terms of changing is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ways to do it is a bilateral contract with somebody else. To do it by yourself is very ineffective. So when you're considering making a change that you think makes sense, commit to somebody else verbally. And then when you're kind of writing it down, which you should do, write it down. Put the reason that you're doing it. And the reason should be for someone else.
Okay.
So if you can connect the dots in terms of walking your daughters down the aisle.
Right.
That's a big deal. Okay, you will do it for them. We won't do it always for ourselves, but we will do it because we want to be around that experience.
Yeah.
And for me, now it's granddaughters. I'm going to walk them down the aisle. So it's never too late, you know, to make changes. And one of the key elements of the model is, in any time we're changing a habit, is to understand we're going to fall off. You know, we're going to fall off the boat, off the wagon. So the key is to get on, back on, as quickly as possible. So build that into your model, meaning I expect that from time to time I am going to miss a workout session. How am I going to get back on track, and am I going to forgive myself quickly and get back on track? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, what resoluted in terms of reading that, particularly for you? What do you want to change?
Like the part about like being so spent when you get home and then seeing like your family time sometimes is being an initial drain on you. Like, you know, when I get home, my dog is like my shadow. Like, I can't like go to the bathroom without my dog. And now like I can't go to the bathroom without my dog and my daughter. And then, you know, I walk in the door and like my wife is like, you know, she's happy I'm home because she's been home all day with the baby. And, you know, like it shouldn't be that way. I should be, you know, I've been trying to, like, sit in my car and reset before going in the house and trying to, like, be, you know, full of energy and, like, have my daughter see me as, like, a positive thing coming in the door as opposed to someone who's, like, just come out of the washing machine. You know, like, that's been a big, you know, a big thing for me. You know, and also, like, it got me back in the gym this weekend because I definitely fell off the wagon with that for the last 2 weeks. So, you know, I went into the gym and I was working hard and I actually set a couple of new new lifting marks for me that I haven't got to in years, just because I'm trying to like focus and spend energy in bursts, you know, like instead of like the majority of what I do during my day doesn't matter, so I really need to make sure I'm at 100% for the 4 hours a day where I actually need to be at peak performance, whether it's a client meeting or if I'm spending time with my daughter before bed or whatever it is, you know, like you can sleepwalk through a lot of the day, but you really need to make sure you're on point for those key moments, I guess, is what's the biggest takeaway. I mean, I'm only 45 minutes into the book, you know, so I thought it was neat that they had a lot of experience. They were saying a lot of the tennis players had a lot of career success after they were heavily immersed in the program for a while, you know. And I remember when some of those tennis players started jumping up. I'm like, where did this person come from? You know, that was kind of interesting. So.
Yeah, it really, it makes it, and I met, you know, I went there for 10 years and took folks there, and I had the pleasure of, you know, knowing Jim well, and Jim Lair, the author, as well as meeting a lot of these great athletes along the way, and it's real. I mean, it's very, very. So the interval training is what you're talking about, and it's so easy to get into the lethargy of just, you know, getting on the treadmill and going at a regular pace. It's hard to do the intervals, the bursts, and that's what life is, you know. And so the concept of time, you know, the most valuable thing in the world is our time. Not true. It's actually our energy. And so it's energy versus time. That's a major concept. And then rituals versus habits. Those are the two big takeaways from that book. So you've already captured in the first 45 minutes, I think, the two major takeaways. And I think that can change your life, hopefully. 'Cause it did me. He was one of my great mentors and a big part of my life and the lives of a lot of the people that I cared about. So it makes a difference. Okay, so what's on your mind today, guys? What can I help you? What did you get out of the lesson week 5?
Well, the week 5, the biggest takeaways, I guess, were the inverted pyramid needing to we kind of have to relinquish some power to Christine and let her kind of take over our calendars and set our schedules. I like the section on centers of influence a lot. Yeah, the 5 stages, we're definitely going to be doing that, Barry was just saying.
I do think the biggest thing is letting Christine make the appointment so she knows what's going on. I thought that was huge.
Yeah
I think huge. That'll open up time. I do think that we're having a little bit of an issue trying to get her. We have good problems, is what's going on. You know, in the last month, we probably brought in
more. We brought in close to $10 million in the last 6 weeks, which is really, I mean, a quality $10 million too. Like managed money and, you know, not garbage. We're really firing all cylinders. And like I guess one thing right now, Rob, is Christine's just flooded. Like, you know, I think we may want to consider paying some other people for some overtime help, or I don't even know, you know, like right now.
Yeah,
like,
I think that's a good idea.
But yeah, like we've just got so much new business coming in, and we have some existing business where we've got some complex estates that are trying to get settled, and she's only one person. And quite honestly, like, she's been doing all she can to just stay afloat, and we haven't been able to, like, get the folders put together, which I was a little disappointed in when I came back. you know, we need to do our biography page for the folder. And in the example for the biography page, do you suggest we just kind of have a paragraph about how we came together and then just one or two sentences on each of us, or do you think we should get more detailed with the biography?
The key thing, if you can have one page that looks like your web page, it should look, your LinkedIn page, your team LinkedIn page should look the same as your web page, which should look the same as the front page of the folders. So what are the critical things? It needs to have your name, all right? So you need to, who are you, all right? How do they get in touch with you, and where do you live?
Okay.
All right, that's the most important thing, and you'd be surprised how hard it is to find those things.
Okay, but I like the idea of putting the front profile page, it's the same as our web page, it's the same as our LinkedIn page, it's the same as our, you know, that's actually, you've got a consistent theme going on.
Well, Larry, as our growth director, you are in charge of making sure we do that. So you can get all over us for that one.
All right. Barry says he's got the website, so we'll make it happen.
People are always asking me, what do I do on my LinkedIn page? I said, well, they tell you how to do it. You should be at 100% on your LinkedIn page, okay? That's not hard.
I don't know if our company will let us. we're not allowed to give endorsements. We're not allowed to like anyone's comments.
Yeah, endorsements aren't part of that. It's just filling in the blocks, okay? So you don't need endorsements to be 100%. You just need to fill in the blocks. You need to tell people who you are and what you did and why, you know, just your background. I mean, the stuff that you should be proud of, everything that's on there, and you should fill it in. Now, you can't put all of that stuff on your web page and on your on the folders and all the rest of it, but it should be on your LinkedIn page because people want to know.
Barry and Ed had a question.
That was his question.
That was
mine. Oh, sorry. Barry's question was, are there any teams you work with who you think maybe we could check out their website, someone who's not in our market that we won't be competing with?
That have done a good job with the website based on the Supernova service delivery model.
There's so many. I'll send you a couple. Let me make a big note of
it. Longer they're way out of our market.
Yeah, okay.
So here's what I want to ask
then,
you guys.
And then Ed has a question also.
For you guys also.
For us.
So our digital advisor associate goes live on October 30th.
Gail?
Yeah, Gail. She must choose 15 FAs to work with. And basically, she will build your website for you.
Perfect.
She will help you get you online on this, but there's a requirement. Someone must post every single day. So you have to post, you know.
And you're on LinkedIn.
Yeah, or tweet. You have to post and tweet. It takes 2 seconds. But her requirement is going to be, for the next 3 months, if she signs you guys as one of her 15, one of you must post every day. Now, she will come in here and bother you and say, hey, guys, can we knock out? And she'll show you where your choices are of articles.
And she'll teach us how to do it all.
Exactly. So this could be, and by the way, she will help you upgrade because you guys have the old website. She'll help you. The only thing really you could customize, just so you know, you're asking about Supernova. No, is your mission statement. Now, maybe you can get help with Rob, with your mission statement. Because there's some canned ones, but maybe you guys incorporate something like that. But everything else is just choosing, you know, you want landscapes, you want buildings, you want, you know, stuff like that. Water, mountains. So really there's nothing. hours are canned and all that, so you can't really customize like that, but only your mission statement you can customize.
Okay.
And then your articles, by the way, can keep it to, you know, certain things that you're focusing on. But if you want, I could put you down, but you must work. You must be, we're not asking you to be Donald Trump and post, like, all hours of the night, but at least once a day.
It's easy.
It
takes 2 seconds. Yeah. I can do it.
All right, Rob, for the COI, for the Center of Influence 5 Steps, I feel like at some point before you mentioned that you switched it around where you went and that.
Very smart.
Huh?
Who is that? That's smart. That's great. Thank you.
It was Ryan.
All right.
Did you say you went to meet them first to see if they're really engaged or not?
Yeah, it was really a smart move on this team. They switched the second meeting from coming to their office to going to the to the other team's office, the other professionals, CPA or attorneys or whatever. And the purpose of going to their office first was to demonstrate the fact that how valuable they thought their clientele was. It just changes the game. Instead of it being all about, you know, we want you to give us business, it's about, look, we really are very protective of our clients, and we want to know whoever is going to be touching our clients, because we frankly are committed to extraordinary client experience, and when we introduce them somebody to you, we want that to be a continuum. And so I think it's brilliant. So, you know, I switched it in my workbook, and I'm glad you heard that, because I think that's really important. And because it sets the tone. And frankly, you know what it'll do? It'll make them much more eager to do business with you. When you're saying, you know, our clients are, you know, we're very, very valuable. And it implies an extremely high net worth clientele, which is what everybody's interested in.
Wonderful.
You know, and then you give them a high, you know, you give them your target minimum. You don't give them your absolute minimum. So they get it then, you know, then they'll be much more excited to come in and do business with you.
I mean, I think that the COI process is going to be more important for us than most, because quite honestly, we do not run in a lot of in $5 million net worth client circles in our social lives as much. So at least for me, I envision that 90% of my future clients are going to be coming from existing clients or COIs. Like, it's not people, you know, I'm not at my CrossFit gym and the guy next to me is like, oh, you know, I'm worth $10 million while I'm doing my deadlifts. You know, I think for us, this is kind of going to be our key driver. And what you said about how one good center of influence can change your career, I think really resonated, because in my personal interviews with a lot of top producing advisors that I know, a lot of them have a handful of people that have really fed them a lot of great people. And, you know, I think that's underappreciated in terms of if you can get a couple of good centers of influence. I mean, like, you know, Barry has a very good client that he's worked with a long time named Ellis, and Ellis has probably sent, what has he sent you, Barry? $15 million, $20 million,
probably.
You know?
Well, I think the interesting one is Alex, just getting Alex now also.
Yeah, Barry's just brought in a professional hockey player, so we may be able to work our way in with that crowd a little bit more. It's getting all those centers of influence and really leveraging them, I think, is going to be a key to our success. So we're going to spend a lot of time on that process.
I got a question. Like, with Supernova, Ed was telling me that Ed thinks that we should meet with the team in, that you want us to meet with that deals
their sports and entertainers.
He thinks we should bring them in on somebody like Alex because they will, they know that
they have a process. They have, I've seen,
they're in Los Angeles or what?
No, they're in Aventura. They're great.
He feels very strongly that it'll help enhance it. That we, but they're probably not a supernova team.
No, so, but they're a super successful team. They work, they've got several athletes and entertainers, and they have helped them launch sneaker lines and colognes and perfumes and clothing lines, and they travel the world with them, and they get it, and they have special retired athletes and injured athletes that meet with their prospects and clients and tell them their story and how they messed up in life and how it's so important to have a financial advisor. They just have a whole process around it that, you know, maybe it's good to partner with them just on the first few. And by the way, they speak at Best of the Best and all that, and they say, just don't go at it alone. Just use us for the first couple, see how we do it, and then you could go and become sports directors yourselves. All you need is 5 clients, but just at least use us at the beginning just to see how we do it.
So how do you suggest we partner with other teams,
that are not,
Rob, that are not doing Supernova?
Hey, guys, I'm pulling up to the valet, so I'm going to bow out of the call. But I can recap with you tomorrow morning as well.
We'll give you a synopsis later, Larry. Just concentrate on the golf.
Okay, I appreciate that. Somebody's got to be the face of the team out there in the community. So
at least make us look good.
Yeah, say hi to all those rich people for us.
You got it.
if you accidentally bump into their golf cart, it's a good way to introduce yourself.
Exactly. All right, thanks.
Bye.
Thanks.
All right, Larry's playing in a high-end charity tournament with some people today.
Perfect. I would, you know, this is a team within your firm, right?
Correct. We do a lot of partnering with other teams.
None of them are Supernova teams, though.
Yeah, to handle client-specific cases.
Here's what I suggest. You don't ever want to give up your Supernova relationship, meaning you're the ones that are doing the 12-4-2s. Because they don't do Supernova doesn't mean that they can't be brought in just like a money manager. They'll have expertise in doing things that you won't have, and that's how we learn. So I'm a big believer also in specialization. You can't be a specialist in everything. And to fake it means you're not going to – you can get a certain kind of client, but you won't keep them. And that's the key, is to keep them. So, you know, I focused a great deal on that and tried to get the guys to share their expertise so they didn't waste their time doing one mortgage or one 401k or one this or one that, and just tried to have people that did whatever they do well and share. As long as they're trustworthy and other people are vouching for them and you make a good deal, maybe you have a couple of meetings so you can feel the trust or not feel the trust. But I'm a big believer in specialization because you can't know everything about everything. Your clients expect you to be able to find them the expertise that they need. You need to be experts at some things. And maybe this is your expertise, but think about I was just reading some books over the weekend. You know, a person puts into a book 4 years of work and, 30 years of their knowledge, and we can read it in 6 hours or 5 hours. So you can have one client, and you can drain the brain of these people that have been spending, 10 years or 20 years working on sports marketing. So it's worth it. But you don't go into it saying, I'm gonna abdicate this account. No, you still do your 12-4-2s, And if you're interested in this market, you become the student. They're the professor, and they teach you everything.
No, we're not specializing in this market. This is not the location or not the market for us. Like with the professional athletes, entertainers, South Florida has some, but I don't know if that's where we belong right now.
Well, you can decide later. You know, I mean, it's not. But you can learn, and you can certainly won't hurt you. But I think you, if you have the people, the expertise, and they have credibility, and other people recommend them, I'm a big believer in that.
Okay.
Anyway, so that was, boy, you guys are very, you know, I started out with a question, what's on your mind? How'd you do with the lesson? And see, each one of you is a consultant. And one of the things that we fall into the trap of is talking and giving too much of our advice when, in fact, what does the client want? They want to talk. And they want your advice, but they also probably have the answers themselves. And so you as a consultant should open up every call, phone call, in-person meeting with the question, you know, I had an agenda before we started, but before I start on my agenda, what's on your agenda? What's on your mind?
We do that.
It's really important. All right. And here's something that I also recommend. The question, we tend to not let the client finish. So a good follow-up question is, what else?
Okay.
And sometimes the wife, you know, hasn't spoken, and this is her chance. So just don't be so anxious to get into the material that you don't give them a chance to finish their thoughts. So what else, guys? What else is on your mind?
Okay. Are you asking us, or are you just,
Yeah.
We're sure you're just doing it for effect. I don't know, Barry, is there anything that's on your mind?
No, I think, not really. I don't have any more comments or questions right now.
I'll tell you, for me, I was just having this conversation. There's another advisor in the office who's a younger guy that's working with a team that has a very old person who's pretty much out of the business, but they're still kind of in the business. I'm talking about Adam. And, you know, we talked to him a little while back about maybe working with us because he's kind of, essentially, he had one senior partner that went out on permanent disability, and it was the daughter, and he's working with the father still, who's like 90 and just sleeps in his chair half the day. So he's effectively running the practice by himself, fullness.
Yeah.
So he's effectively running the practice by himself, and he's one of my good friends outside the office. And we approached him about maybe working with us some, and, you know, kind of, he needs bandwidth support, but, you know, he's kind of in a situation where he's sitting real pretty because the one person's pretty much out forever, and then when this other guy finally steps away from the business, he's looking at a practice right now that's worth about $1.4 million, and he kind of came on with them 6 years ago, and he's just fallen into it, a real, real good situation. So he's, you know, going back and forth on certain things in terms of, you know, what he wants out of out of life and out of his practice, but he's going to have a tough time running this thing by himself long term and trying to grow and doing all the roles and doing all that stuff. So I think he could benefit from something like this, but one of the things that we were discussing was if we have our Supernova thing up and running, it's going to be a lot easier for us to approach other people and show them we have a system and show them we have a process and do that as opposed to just kind of saying things will be better or things can will work out more. But another part of the conversation we had is that him and I both run portfolios for clients. We're portfolio managers in addition to our other duties. And we were discussing, like, how much of our time should be devoted to that, or even if we should even do that, you know, or if we maybe only do one strategy as opposed to four or five strategies. And do you find that people who do this program can be successful portfolio managers and spend a significant amount of their time on those duties, or should we try to outsource and leverage and scale as much as possible? I mean, with our conservative, moderate, and aggressive allocations, right now we're kind of using the frames models as a starting point, and we're modifying 20 to 30% of that in terms of adding, trying to add alpha, bring some of our outside research and our quantitative stuff, and, you know, kind of do that, where it's not taking a huge amount of our time. But our taxable income model is a little bit more fluid, and we have a covered call option strategy that's a labor-intensive strategy, but it is working really well, and we're gathering money from other advisors now, too. So I was just kind of curious as to what your thoughts were there in terms of time demand, because, like, for me, you know, is my time better served doing that, or is it better served spending more time at the office in front of attorneys and lawyers? Or, you know, like, I'm sure it's a case-by-case scenario, but kind of where do you see people, and do you have a lot of portfolio managers that are successful with this, or do we try to outsource as much as possible and leverage as much time as we can? Because I'll tell you, my wife and I are doing that right now. We're like, I'm hiring a pool guy, I'm hiring a, you know, long guy. We're thinking about doing, like, the delivered groceries and outsourcing any non-essential tasks so we don't have to do them.
I think you answered your own question there, Ryan. The reality is, I love the idea that you are a money manager and that you have the ability to add alpha and that you understand even what alpha is. It's very rare now.
It's not adding alpha in all strategies, I must admit.
The goal is.
Yeah, that's the goal. Yes, historically, I'll tell you what it does is it changes our pitch quite a bit. Because part of our value is, you know, we're trying kind of a skinny down time commitment on this, trying to add alpha by dropping some of the losers. But I don't know if you have other advisors that have been falling into this trap, but we kind of have a higher protection. Like, we're very happy taking 80 to 90% of the upside for 70 to 80% of the downside. That's kind of our practice. So we have definitely been too conservative and too protected and all that through a lot of this rally. Our clients have made money, but clearly if we would have just bought the index, they would have done better. You know what I mean? Like, I think 95% of the advisors you talk to are probably in a similar situation to that, where if you had any alternative, you've got any international, you know, like, it's just hurt. So
right.
We have not been adding alpha. With the exception of maybe one strategy. You know, it's been a struggle.
Well, then I might consider keeping that one strategy and you know, delegating just like you did the lawn guy and the pool guy. It's up to you guys. I think it creates value in the eyes of the client, and it does change your pitch, okay? So I think it's important that you have understanding of equities and how to build a portfolio and that you're actually doing it. I think that appeals to people. And it makes you unique in the market, and you're not just buying ETFs and index funds and I mean, you know, I think the problem is, you know, the people that do that are going to lose to the robocops, you know. So I think you've got to create some uniqueness in the way you do things. And your ability to do that effectively is really important. So I would not, I would probably work on getting, you know, more effective at it, do less maybe. Don't try and do, and you don't need you on every portfolio, right? Most portfolios can be pretty well run with your models, but where you think you're creating some value, then I'd continue to do that. But, I mean, the greatest thing about, you know, having a baby or becoming a manager, or, you know, and trying to run an office and run a run your business is that you really look at your business and segment. Segmentation is not just segmenting your clients. It's segmenting your whole life and figuring out what's most important versus what's least important. So you want to do that with every part of your practice, not just who are the best clients, but what are the most important and effective activities. Is this a hobby, or is this something I really have a talent for and like to do and am very good at it? If you're not, then delegate. Okay, so it just depends. I personally like it. I wasn't good at it as an FA. I'm much better at it as a 71-year-old than I was as a you know, 35 or 30-year-old. But you know, that's a lifetime of work to get to that position where you actually know what you're talking about. So that's kind of. You guys got to look in the mirror and is it sexy in the terms of being able to market it? Yes, it does add some ability to make you different in the market. So I would look at it real hard, but I'm not one of those that says, no, just delegate everything. Cause I don't think that, I think in the end, expertise in that area is very valuable.
Rob, I had a question on, this is fresh in my mind because we just had Ritz Carlton here on Saturday. And what about the creating an emotional connection and wowing their clients? Like when I know we're not there yet, but I mean, have you guys ever thought about that stuff, like the birthday cards, the happy anniversary, when it's their wedding anniversary, happy anniversary, when it's an anniversary that you opened their account with them, the New Year's cards, then there's, you know, maybe just like little things like that, the emotional connection and the wow customer service part.
I think, yeah, it's something we talk about a lot. I actually had the Janice Book of Wow on the back of my toilet for 2 years.
Yes, right.
And I just consistently read it when I was in the bathroom. Because that's where you get most of your good reading done, is on the toilet. At least me.
He was saying things like clients, some FAs, like clients call and ask for this wire or ask for this FedEx or whatever, and we're just picking things in FedExes and sending them out. Meanwhile, some FAs really wow them with like a little note in there or just a card and just this extra, a picture or something. Maybe your baby, sticking a picture of you and your baby in there, FedEx, and, hey, by the way,
yeah, well,
let me say this because we're running out of time, but here's what I think you guys need to do, okay? First of all, you got to do Supernova right? So that's 1242 financial planning and rapid response to their problems, one-hour response, 24-hour resolution. And you let them know when it gets resolved. Okay? You have an agenda and you have an executive summary for every call, right? Every scheduled appointment, every call has an agenda and executive summary. That will wow them, okay? There's nobody who's doing that. So you got to get that right, and you got to have the leverage to get that right. How you get the leverage to get this done is up to you, but I think you got to take a hard look at the amount of business you're going to be doing and figure out where you can get some leverage. You can hire an intern or hire two interns and almost create a full-time person. If you can hire another sales assistant. You don't need more FAs right now. You need another sales assistant, okay? And you need a couple of interns to get this work done. So you want to get the folders built. You want to get the scheduling done. You want to get your ideal day completed. And then you can worry about the birthday cards and the rest of it, okay? I will tell you some of that is very effective, but it's a luxury compared to 1242, rapid response, and financial planning. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Get our shit together first, and then we can add all the bells and whistles.
Hey, and Rob, you bring up a good point, by the way. When do they finally sit down and say, you know what, maybe it's time to hire someone? Because I'll tell you guys some things. So there's some FAs that went from 1 million to 3 million, and what helped them was, you know what, I was sick of the firm messing with my assistants. Because don't forget, Christine is not yours.
Andrew Schultz, is that what you're talking
about? I mean, I don't know, but I mean, I know a few of them.
He hired four assistants and he buys them lunch every day. So.
Well, you don't have to do that. I mean, you're not there yet. But the point is, you know, Christine could be taken from you at any moment and stuff like that. So they realized that. And so they went and invested on their own CSA, one that nobody can mess with, nobody could take from me. I'll always have one. When this one calls out sick, I always have a backup, and I don't want to deal with other backups that don't do 12-4 or aren't passionate like we are and stuff like that. Because, by the way, it takes, and that was another thing with Ritz Carlton, but it takes one person to just ruin everything for you, and that could be Christine's backup one day, and you just never know it.
All right, so this is part of your leadership. Challenge is to build that relationship with your leadership team so that you have a clear vision of what it's going to take to do what. Can you financially afford it? First, if you can afford it, then, and I recommend even borrowing the money to do it because it'll pay off. You guys are good. You're going to grow. But you need the leverage. And then building that relationship with the management and leadership team so that you are protected. And I agree.
That's Ed talking. He is part of our management leadership team.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking about it because also we're going to have that phase retiring, and they do look at things like, how are they going to be able to inherit my 150 clients? They look at stuff like that. And when you have two CSAs, one that you have on your own that you pay, and things like that. They look at this stuff, and that's just a bigger selling point of your team, just by scale.
Right.
And I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think it's really important. I think it sounds crazy. I'm talking about you guys, you know, I'm not spending the money, but I will tell you, I met with a guy every year at a recognition meeting. We used to have these masters, and we'd win it every year, and I'd go, and he'd seek me out. He was a former Navy pilot. I was a Navy pilot, and he'd say to me, what should I do this year? I said, hire another sales assistant. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, you just grew your business by, 60%. Hire another sales assistant. And he'd do it, and then he'd come back and say, what should I do? I said, hire another sales assistant. Now, that wasn't always the answer, okay? Now we have Supernova. You can do it without hiring another sales assistant, but when you tell me that your team is just completely burning out your sales assistant, I'm telling you, you guys better think hard about that. Because you think the work's going to get less?
Yeah, one of my mentors that retired last year, Alan Levinson, he had two sales assistants that he paid more than anyone I know. Like, he paid them an additional $30,000 on top of their salaries or whatever. And he said that, he looked at me, he said, when I was at my last firm, they threatened to take one away from me, and I told them, we'll get up and leave the firm if you F-U-C-K with my sales assistant. You know, like, he was that serious about it. And, now they know more about his practice, like, they're running it. They're doing everything for him. I mean, like, he didn't have to lift, he was the king of the world, man. He hardly lifted a finger. He came in and read his his Investor's Business Daily and did his trades, and they did everything. And then his partner just focused on planning. She never entered a trade in her life, you know, and they were doing $2 million, you know, so in revenue. I guess when you're doing that much, that 30 grand for the extra sales assistant doesn't seem like that much. But, you know, he had that worked out where his sales assistants were subsidized, I should say. You know, I think the firm was paying, you know, 40 or 50 or.
Yeah, and that, I mean, look, the reality is they're never going to leave him, and he's never going to have a problem with the sales assistant. You don't need to overpay. You want to be fair, and you want to bonus people as you grow. But having the leverage of another talented person, don't make it a casual hire. You know, this is a very serious hire. So you want the best in the world. In this particular position. So don't think of it as sort of a second backup thing. You want world class, absolutely the best that'll be with you for a long time.
It's like you think it's a full-time thing we want to start with?
Yes, go for it. Absolutely go for it.
One of my neighbors is like a part-time marketing associate, Neolisa Silver. She works with the military office. But you think go for a full-time one?
I would, yes. I think you guys are telling me you're that busy. I mean, you know it better than I do, but, you know, and I shouldn't, here I am stepping in giving advice again, but.
Or, might be a little tough medicine, but, you know, he said it last time, you might have to be prepared to work more hours, you know. He said it, right, Rob? You said you got to be prepared to maybe work till 6 or on weekends or something at the beginning, if not, because if you don't hire that sales assistant, then, you know, who is doing this stuff? Who is...
Right, you can't depend on her to build all these folders. I mean, versus not getting them built. I mean,
right.
Everybody digs in and builds some folders. I mean, that's okay. If it's a one-time thing and then it's going to be fine, then you don't need a full-time person. But if it's a full-time job, which it sounds like, then you do it, you know. But you're absolutely right. You know, if it's building the folders and getting them together and she's drowning, you don't let the person drown. You go and pull them out of the water and say, hey, let's all dig in and help, okay? That's only the fair thing to do, and you guys will always remember that you all dug together to build the folders and that you own them then. I mean, it's not just her job, it's everybody's job. And that's what you do in every part of this business. Every part of your team should be when somebody's overwhelmed, you go to their help. If they, you know, especially if you know they're capable. In her case, nobody's saying she's not capable, seeing she's wonderful, but you're going to end up discouraging her, and she's not going to be able to carry her end of the bargain, which makes everybody feel bad, right? She's not going to feel good, so you want to help her. So first help her, and then figure out a solution. And ask her. She knows. She knows whether it's a full-time job, a part-time job, an intern job, you know. So include her in this decision. I can't tell you. I don't live there. I can tell you that leverage is really important, and having competent, terrific people will help you double your business in a lot faster time than not having those people. So that's a good homework assignment for everybody. Figure out what you need. Yeah.
I have a whole page of homework right now.
Hey, Rob, quick question before we wrap up. What about, I don't know if we ever talked about a client relationship tool, like when you guys start. I mean,
like
there,
ACT or something
like
that?
Yeah, something like that, like a piece of technology or what are other FAs doing using?
Yeah, like, so we have an advisor in our office that's doing like $3 million on its own and working 160 hours a week. And literally, everyone he meets, he puts in his ACT or his client tool, and like if I mention anyone's name, he can like go to his computer and pull it up. He's like, ah, yes, I was at a brunch with them in 2006, and we talked about this attorney. You know, like, do you recommend any tools like that? Because I think that that's something that is missing from our practice, where there's just so much information that goes through, and like a lot of times, you know, we run into people that know each other, and then we'll forget about it, or you know, that type of stuff.
What are you using now? Nothing.
Pretty much nothing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Look, if we were perfect, we wouldn't be talking.
No, I mean, it's great. You know, if they weren't dirt, custodians would have no job, right? So we need to have some problems. My puppy.
Doesn't sound like a puppy. What is that? Is that a coon hound or something? What is that?
He's my lab. He just somehow, my brother taught him to howl, and it's been my curse ever since. My brothers, they do nice things for each other. He did that. So, anyway.
Get your kids a drum set for Christmas?
Exactly. I would say ACT is the easiest and simplest thing you can use. And, our scheduler works with ACT, so that's great. We don't sell a CRM system. Some people use Salesforce. Some people use different things.
Yeah, my wife loves Salesforce, by the way.
Yeah, we're getting Salesforce.
We are?
Yeah, we're the quarter.
So we might as well wait for that. It's free.
Yeah, I would see if you can be a pilot on Salesforce then. You know, if they're getting Salesforce, that means people are actually using it ahead of time. See if you can become a pilot.
Sorry, Ben. The pilot's over.
Yeah, there's even something crazy, but anyway, you'll with our 3D, it's almost going to be like there's going to be a client relationship management system that's going to keep you honest. So if you say, okay, I want to speak to this client once a month,
mm-hmm.
it will remind you towards the end of the month that you have not spoken to this client.
Interesting.
But we don't have that problem, do we?
Exactly.
Well, no, I think we need to kind of get on this a little bit, because I'm at a point right now where, like, I've been holding off, like, I don't want to say, like, holding off on talking to clients, but I've been so focused on all this stuff, I'm not making as many calls as I was before, and I need to get on these call cycles with my clients and start to do it, I guess. You know, like, I feel like we have to take that step, so maybe if we just get... our first, we're supposed to have 20 folders done right now and have 20 people scheduled, correct?
Correct.
So, yeah, we have zero right now. I've talked to a couple people about what days and times would be better for them. But that's about it.
So you can go ahead and, you know, just create some time between, say, 4 and 6 and build some folders and get yourselves going. Come on. Because you guys can't fall behind here. This is really important. All right,
yeah, we need to do the bios. Oh, that's the other thing. In the folders, I went through with Christine, and there's something for performance. Like, is that just, we just print that out before our meeting that week or whatever? Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah, you can, okay. Yes, whatever you're allowed to email to them, do it. If you're trying to talk about the subject of the month, like long-term care, and you've got an approved piece for that, then you send that along with the agenda.
Yeah, we need that focus standard topic thing.
Yeah,
okay. All right.
So, yeah, we've been missing you, Ryan, so you need, you need your leadership to get, pull these guys together now. Come on.
Getting back on the horse.
Yeah, back on the horse. Get these schedules, because seriously, you got to call these clients every month. Come on. Especially the top, you know, 50 at least.
Yeah. No, oh, yeah, we're talking to people, but yes, I understand. We should get it scheduled in. All right, perfect.
All right, well, thanks, guys. Last question is, what are the 3 takeaways from today's call?
Hired assistant.
Yeah.
Get our folders done. Stay late if we have to do it ourselves.
Yeah, and you know, get the folders done. And also, I like the for the start each meeting with the what else, you know, what's on your mind, and then what else, and really press, and then contact management. So that's four things.
That's great. All right. So one of the things that you want to do when you're done with a client meeting is ask them the same question, okay? Because you're a consultant, right? So the question, what's on your mind? You know, I have an agenda, you have an agenda, but before I get into my agenda, let's talk about yours. What's on your mind is a great question. What else? And then at the end, you know, what are the three most important takeaways you've gotten from this session today?
Let me ask you one other thing and you answer it like in 30 seconds or less, but we have a couple of professionals that we feel we have opportunity with. So I'll give you two of them. One of them is a guy I've known since like first grade. He married one of my good friends from high school and was in my group in high school. I've known him for 25 years. He worked for a family office in Jupiter Island for a long time as their in-house tax specialist, and it was kind of one of those black holes where they did everything in there. He's now working as a tax senior at a large accounting firm in Palm Beach. So, and he's now being tasked with finding business. With him, how do you think I approach, we've talked about doing some business and invited him to some networking things, and he seems to be interested. How many things do I send him before I have the come to Jesus conversation with him about, like, you know, is this happening or not? Or do you have that?
Call him up and take him to lunch.
Okay.
Let him talk. Ask him what he needs. Tell me about your practice. What are you doing? What's your responsibility? How can I help?
Okay. Another one is an estate attorney that we've shared some clients on, and who I also – he was really good friends with some of my friends from college. We're the same age, and they're very tight. We've gone to lunch a couple of times. Ideas have been flowing. It's good. But I know that he works with some other financial advisors that he's close with.
Yep.
Now, he seems to be interested in doing business with us, but every attorney does. Well, I don't know. We have to see. He says he's given our name to some people, but, you know, nobody's called yet. You know what I mean? One of those scenarios. I did have a conversation with him once early on in the relationship, maybe too early. And he kind of was put off a little bit, and he thought it was kind of like a quid pro quo, and I was, like, you know, being a little bit too direct with him. I think he probably caught me on the wrong day. But how would you suggest going about that relationship, like knowing that there's other financial advisors that he knows?
I'd start over.
Okay.
Okay, and start over with the five-step model that I talked about. He's a perfect guy for that.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Thanks, guys. Thanks.
Bye.
That was a good call.
Yeah.
It's good. I listened to the whole thing.